Hawks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line, get in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. Trump speaks to NATO after new strikes on Iran. I see Hedgeseth, Rubio, Besant. I see Stephen Miller. See a few other. I don't know who the other two are. I guess I should. I can't. My eyesight's not quite what it used to be on the monitor. But he's giving a press conference. They're at the NATO summit, and we'll keep an eye on that. Says the NATO summit has been very successful. That's the first headline on the Chiron coming out of this. 251-343-0106. NATO. These things about NATO, it's always about them paying their fair share. These European countries who don't pay their 2% of GDP or whatever it is for NATO. They just kind of scoff at it. And then when Trump talks tough about ending NATO, all the ideologues, all the neocon ideologues get really upset. NATO's a throwback of the Cold War. It was designed to be a bulwark against the Soviet Union. And you have this, this antiquated structure that no longer, they're trying to repurpose it. It's not going to last forever. I'm surprised it's lasted this long. But Trump about to take questions after declaring the Iran ceasefire over. I'm sure he's going to get hit. It's 7 o'clock there in Turkey. So it's in the evening. And Trump talking about oil prices coming down. Well, not today. We're still at $75 a barrel. About where we were when we started the program. 251-343-0106 is a text line. Also, see the vice president's going to give remarks here in about an hour and a half, 1:30 Eastern time. So that'll be interesting as well. Look, I'm on the program. We'll talk to Bradley Jay, my colleague at Breitbart News. I'm very interested in the whole Graham Plattner thing. You can see like a drop dead date of like July the 13th for Plattner to drop out. And then they have like 2 or 3 days after that to name a replacement. So you got to survive the next 5 days. Now, the next 5 days for Graham Plattner, there's probably going to be more allegations. The Democratic establishment is on board with getting him off the ballot. They know that he is a loser. He can't win in November. I guess they thought he was their best shot up until now, and now they don't. It's just, okay, the Nazi tattoo did not dissuade you and the people of the Democrat voters in Maine of going with this guy. Now you want a do-over? And there's also the possibility July 13th that the Democratic Party just walks away from him. And they take him off the ballot and this will go to court. And this will be fascinating to watch. This is one of those skirmishes in the Democratic Party. They made this bed. They have to lie in it. As John Kennedy, the Republican senator from Louisiana, said, this is what happens, and he called it the Hamas wing of the Democratic Party when you let them pick your candidates. You're going to have flawed candidates. It's an upstart political movement with no adults in the room. I think where the Democratic Party went wrong for so many years was acting like they were all for what these guys believed and then doing nothing about it. Not really moving on it. Not really moving on bringing the socialist utopia to America. Don't talk enough about that. I don't think we spend enough time talking about what their rhetoric is and what they really mean. The Democrats get a pass. This is the media. And then after several decades of this, they're crazy. The people they whipped into this frenzy are expecting results. It's always kind of a fascinating thing to me, at least the Democrats who texted into this show are all too eager to bash Trump, and I don't expect them to like Trump. I don't even expect them not to bash Trump. But what are you for? If you're not for Trump, we know that. We know you think he's a failure. We know you don't like him. What are you for? What do you want? You just don't want Donald Trump? You know what the dirty little secret is? Whoever the next Republican president, you're going to have the same level of derangement. And you're going to just keep doing this. And you're not going to get anything in return. You're just going to not like Republicans. Over and over and over again. And that's fine. It's a free country. You can do whatever you want. But these guys, they never articulate what they... take Trump out of the equation. Well, we could do that. Trump derangement syndrome. But what are you for? What's ideal for you? Outlaw the Republican Party? The next Republican's going to be worse than Trump. We lived through this with George W. Bush. George Bush is a warmonger. George Bush is a dictator. George Bush goes away a few years later. Well, he wasn't that bad. He was nothing compared to this Trump guy. Guess what? If I'm still on the air, God willing, in 2030, 2034, whatever, the next time around, we're a couple of years deep into a Republican administration. This guy's a warmonger. I mean, it's just going to be the same democracy. You do this every time, but you don't get anything out of it. Do we have any text here? Unless I checked, not very many. We got B Dark writes, Jeff, the USA needs to occupy the straits, charge tolls on all takers, and see if anybody can stop us. We're the strongest military in the world. They can stop us. Well, they can't stop. It's going to come at casualties, I guess. I mean, the Iranians I wouldn't say mastered. I don't know if that's the right word. But they have learned the art, the dark art of drone warfare. You still have pirates. You still have, it's the open seas. It's not like taking the Mobile Bay. It's not like taking the bridge. You can't just take it. You're always going to take incoming from the shore in Iran. I feel like the only solution would be to figure out a way to bypass the Strait of Hormuz. Could you ever do that? Could you build a port south of the Strait of Hormuz, perhaps? I don't. Probably not. Not without some great expense. Whoever can figure that out will become wealthy. It's just the economy is fragile. It's reliant on these commodities. And maybe this is just sort of the global order and the way we have a global economy now. But But this has to all be taken into account. And I believe people when they say, yes, of course the administration war-gamed us out. They knew this was going to happen. Well, then we knew it was going to happen, but I don't think they fully vetted the political consequences. Really? In an election year, you're going to do this? Now's the time? Well, maybe it's this. And I, you know, I've thought about this a lot of every scenario. Why did Trump do what he did when he did it? That initial strike. Why did he break, in case of emergency, the glass? Why did he create this calamity? Because apparently he saw something. And my guess, I mean, let's just think about this. If you think Democrats are going to win in November, pulling off such an exercise would be challenging. So Democrats have control of Congress, they can just take the funding away. There was already a move to strip the president of these war powers. So Netanyahu gets Trump on the phone, says, look, we have, here's proof. They're looking to act here on this. They're conventional weapons. They're looking to do something here. And if you don't do something now before you're kneecapped by a midterm election that's going to go Democrats' favor, at least based on historical precedent, then the country's going to be in peril. There's going to be something really, really, really bad happen to you. So he does it. But now you have to put this fire out. We'll get another memorandum of understanding, probably another peace agreement maybe, and then it's just going to go the other way. I mean, we're going to be playing this perpetually. Coleman texture. I live in a poor area of Coleman County, and lately I've seen a couple of Doug for Alabama signs in my head. I can hear the shrieking about a decent man, just like they like to shriek democracy. I see a lot of the, I've seen probably five or six Doug Jones signs around Fairhope. No, Tommy Tuberville for governor signs. That's Fairhope. I get it. My guess is Doug Jones will do better than most Democrats that have been on the ticket to run for governor. We can even take the primary results, but I do think Alabamians will show up in November and they're going to just check the box for Republican. They're not really going to do a analysis of every Republican candidate on the ballot. Won the Republican nomination, that's good for me. Let's move on down to the ballot or whatever, the referendums, constitutional amendments. Butterknife, what is Tuberville's platform for governor? What is he running on? I think a lot of it, and he hasn't spent nearly enough time on this, Butterknife, but a change from the status quo. I mean, 10 years of a governor is a long time. She has not been. She's been great for Montgomery. I just don't think she's somebody that the state has really rallied behind. More on that in a moment. That's an interesting question about Tuberville. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. Programming note tomorrow on the show, it is Thursday, and you never can have enough April Murray Fogle on FM Talk 106.5. She'll join us. A couple other guests to be named later. I had to kind of evaluate the news and see which way, what direction we go with that. A couple other things. So the question, what's Tuberville's? I kind of be privy to some of this because I've really been paying attention to this a lot more butter knife than what's probably out there reported. I think Tuberville is going to come in and try to downsize state government. I think he's going to try to fire a lot of people, especially at corrections, because corrections is kind of the failed state of state government. And no one can get a grip on it. So why? It's just they need to clean it out. Need to go in a different direction there. I think transportation policy, the Ivy administration's put a keen focus on repaving, just putting asphalt on top of asphalt. We need new roads. We don't need repaved roads. We need more capacity. We don't have enough capacity in this state. The state's growing, or more people are traveling through Alabama to get somewhere. That has got to be a priority. More cars on the road, and just putting asphalt on top of asphalt, does that really address, you know, the fundamental problem? And here's like something to think about. I think like it's a real question. Like, if you expand capacity, do the roads wear out as fast? Do you have to be in this perpetual state of repaving? Maybe not. I mean, I don't know the science of the engineering. I mean, we have concrete interstates in Alabama. It's just as much as we've been going to Atlanta lately to watch baseball, you look and you see that. And yes, Georgia has its traffic woes, but you don't see every 5 years some kind of repaving project in the same place. But the asphalt contractors made out like bandits after rebuild Alabama. But we do need repaving, and there's places in Alabama that need to be repaved, but that can't be the central focus of your transportation policy. We got to widen Interstate 65. We got to build the I-10 bridge. So I hear there's an announcement coming on that, but I don't know what that's going to be. Probably some of you aren't going to be real pleased. There's probably going to be some kind of toll component that's going to be a little more than was previously discussed. Mike writes, it will be crazy ironic if the midterms are lost because of Israel causing a war. Even with all the redistricting efforts, it's basically them hanging on themselves by the ability to quit, try to expand their borders. We're going to have Democratic control of Congress and the Senate, all because Israel wants to be the only military power. Unnamed texter, Trump was hell-bent on eliminating the nuclear threat from the world's number one terrorist country. The majority of Americans support him because he doesn't always weigh the political ramifications. If the majority of Americans support him, then the political ramifications would suggest otherwise. It's not an 80-20 issue. That statement contradicts itself. However, I don't understand why U.S. and Israel doesn't occupy Karg or Quesh Island in order to control the strait. Is it obtainable? Is Karg Island obtainable? But the majority of Americans aren't going to support this, and they're going to vote for Democrats. Maybe it's majority of Americans versus majority of American voters is what you meant, but the voters are going to have the final say, and Republicans are either going to stay home or vote for Democrats. That sounds insane, but people are more motivated to vote against something, and voting against high gas prices is a rational response. Butter Knife, your guest yesterday said we had a bunch of people running who didn't really have a platform. There's no big idea. That seems to be Tuberville. Tuberville has some big ideas, but the big ideas, the point he was trying to make was John Wall had big ideas. But the knock on John Wall is, well, you're going to be lieutenant governor. You can't enact these ideas. Why are you running on them? But why are you running on for lieutenant governor in the first place? Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Many thanks. He said, you don't have to call me Mr. The whole world called me Hank. He said, Pepper, can you make it?
back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning, or what's left of this Wednesday morning. If you want to get in on the text line, 251-343-0106, that's how you do it. Mike raises this question, I guess, for an unnamed texter. If the majority of Americans support Trump, then why is his approval rate at an all-time low of 35%? And from Mike. Joining us now on the line, he's my colleague at Breitbart News. Bradley Jay joins us. Bradley, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Glad to be with you today.
Hey, thanks for making time. Well, I was going to start with Plattner, but we got to start with Iran and what's going on at the NATO summit. And my worry here is this will cause gas prices to go back up. I don't know how significantly, but it's not even, you know, the pain at the pump. It's the political fallout from it. And I thought things are kind of moving along good for Republicans up until last night.
Yeah, I mean, it had almost turned into something that folks weren't speaking about as much in the media, certainly. Everything was all Plattner, and now here we are back in Iran. It seems like this story just won't go away. And there are a lot of people, whether appropriately or not, spiking the football, saying that, well, this was what we predicted the whole time. Iran was never going to fully come to the table, and they're savages, and this is just the inevitable outcome. And I don't know if that's true, but it's certainly the way that a lot of people feel. And without question, it's not the desired outcome that the Trump administration envisioned when they started this conflict, if you will, and when they were hashing out this MOU recently.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know if this is going to have – I mean, it always takes Democrats maybe a few days to kind of catch up and weaponize something like this. But, it felt good. Okay, before this, and I think you and I talked about this last time, a lot of these prognosticators like Larry Sabato and the Cook Political Report were leaning back toward Republicans keeping the House. Whoa, you know, and then the Graham Plattner stuff and the Senate was looking like it was going to stay with Republicans. And then I just this bubbles up and, still a lot of unknowns here. But the fear of like $5 a gallon gas when people go to vote is going to cause them to vote Democrat. I don't think there's any other way to get around that.
Yeah, I mean, it's. Certainly, if you're one of these independents or swing voters or somebody who might have held your nose and voted for Trump, even though you weren't inclined to do so. And I don't believe there are as many of those now as there were in 2016, but there are still some out there. Got to think this might push them the other way, or maybe even convince some people to stay home in the midterms. Remember, this is how things have played out historically. It is a midterm in the president's first midterm, even though he had another term a couple back. But he's fighting history not to lose the House. This seems to be the way that the pendulum swings. And if you look at the Senate map, the map is already one that favors Democrats. He needed a lot of things to go his way to have a good midterms. Iran, just the economy stupid, it just really muddies things up and just – shows you how just a couple days can be all it takes to just totally upset the apple cart of these political prognosticators. And we still got a long way to go, but got to get that economy and Iran and energy prices figured out.
I mean, that's my hope, that the energy prices will get resolved. I don't think this would matter. I think we would still be talking about Iran and obviously a very important situation and what happens there. But I think the problem would be, there would be less of a political fallout, and it would just be the usual, left wing tropes about war and whatever, and people are kind of numb to that.
Yeah, and look, this is something that was discussed a lot during that big Massey re-election fight that ultimately Trump prevailed. I think Massey lost by like 10 points to the Trump-endorsed challenger who honestly didn't do that much campaigning. But with him talking about, I mean, Massey was talking about the Epstein files a good bit, of course, but he was also talking about Iran and just totally, I hate to say disrespectfully, but I mean, to a degree, yeah, just totally fighting the president on everything. And there were certainly some people who wondered if Massey and the part of the party who is with him, if that was going to encourage them to stay home. If you look at what's happening on the other side of the aisle with Democrats, I mean, yeah, there's some crazy stuff going on. But with all these radicals and socialists that they're electing, I don't think there's any question that their base, and make no mistake, the radical socialists are the base of the Democrat Party, that their base is a lot more motivated going into November than Republicans are. And Republicans have to figure out something that they can do to get the base back with them, because if the economy and gas prices are not where they need to be, and Republicans' only answer is to point at Democrats and yell about socialism and communism, it's going to be a bad midterm for Republicans.
Let's talk about the socialism here, or at least let's start Graham Plattner. And I keep seeing this headline that, you know, if Susan Collins prevails, I think she will. We do this every 6 years with Susan Collins. She wins her election, even though this is going to be the year it's going to go. Maine's finally going to, since he's finally going to go Democrat, it never does. How hard is the Senate for Democrats if they can't win in Maine?
It's much more difficult for me to imagine the Democrats taking the Senate now than it was just a few weeks or a few months ago. You're right. I think that Maine will stay with Republicans. But if you look elsewhere on the map, Michigan right now is a Democrat state. That's one that former Congressman Mike Rogers of Michigan, not of Alabama, a Republican, thought they'd have a real good chance. But Abdul El-Sayed, he's battling it out with Congressman Haley Stevens on the Democrat side there. That's going to be tough. I don't know whether it's El-Sayed or Haley Stevens. I still think that's going to be difficult for Republicans to flip this year. You also look at Georgia as another Democrat-held state. John Ossoff, look, he's a dynamo. He's raising just a ton of money. He's got a broad appeal to Democrats. That's going to be real tough for Republicans to take. Crazy to say that about Georgia, but it's going to be tough for Republicans to flip. If you look at the other states outside of Maine that Democrats would need to flip, you look at North Carolina. That's probably the most likely. Tillis is retiring. Former governor Roy Cooper continues to have a wide lead in the polls there. You look at Texas. I'm sorry, it's like with Maine. We hear this all the time, how Texas is going to turn blue. I think that Paxton is in good shape in Texas. You look at Ohio. Senator Husted, Republican, appointed by DeWine, who is not with the base of the party. He's battled with Trump, definitely in that moderate Chamber of Commerce wing, up against Sherrod Brown. Sherrod Brown definitely, I think, has a better populist claim, or at least brand, than Husted. But it's Ohio. I mean, even with Ramaswamy not doing so hot in polling on the governor's side, I mean, Democrats are excited there. You got to think Republicans can still hold on there. And then in Alaska, that's another state where Republican Dan Sullivan the Democrats have even, you know, recruited another candidate named Dan Sullivan just to cause chaos on the ballot. But I don't know. That's a tough race for Democrats now. They do have a candidate, Mary Pultola, who has won statewide before. She won their statewide House seat a couple cycles ago, twice in the special and then in the general, before losing 2 years later. But if you look at all these states, I mean, okay, let's say it's 53-47. Let's say that Democrats win North Carolina. Okay, well, Republicans are down to 52. Democrats would still need to win Ohio, which would be a huge surprise. They would need to win Texas, which I just don't think is going to happen. They've got to take advantage of some of the chaos in Alaska, and just Alaska being, you know, with ranked choice and being an odd state. Still, I wouldn't predict that to happen. And then you look at Maine. There are a couple other states there where Democrats and Republicans are trying to bring into play. Democrats have a Democrat running as an independent in Nebraska, but Republicans.